Yo, what's good, y'all? Welcome to the John Cat Show, episode number 37. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Happy Monday. I hope everybody had a great weekend and y'all are having an easy Monday so far. I've got my, I got no headphones on today, so I can't hear myself. I figure I've done enough of these. I know I'm talking at a sufficient volume, so the headphones bother my ears. I'm going to try to do without it. We'll see how it goes. If this one sounds weird, then I apologize. And no hat either. And no hair. I chopped my whole hair off. No hat, no headphones, no hair. I'm naked this episode. Except I got my hoodie on. It's getting cold down in Florida finally. I was just saying, I never used to get cold, man. Ever. Especially young. It's funny because I'm thin. Something people don't realize. Like, thin people tend to not get cold as easily. You think, oh, you don't have padding, but from what I've looked up on this subject, because I used to literally, like, I went to school in Massachusetts in the winter and I'd have on like a light sweatshirt or something, you know, people be bundled up, or I could even wear like a t-shirt or something in the winter. I was never cold. I was always hot. It was never cold enough inside. But my understanding is for a lot of thin people that have really high metabolisms, you're always kind of running hot or feeling hot. And I actually have a low natural body temperature too, which you think the opposite. So like, I believe the lower your body temp, you're maybe more sensitive to the heat, or the higher your body temp is more conducive to being in heat. I'm not sure, but I was always hot and I was never cold. And for sure, one of the signs of getting older is I get cold sometimes now, man. Like it dropped down in the 40s here last night. It's going to be 40s tonight. I know people are like, 40s, that's warm. But the 40s now don't feel like what the 40s used to feel like. So I still like sleeping cold though. But I don't know. Give me like, you know, upper 60s and sunny. I'll take that all day. Like 70 degrees and sunny, 67 degrees and sunny. I'll take that all day. Celebrated my grandmother's 97th birthday last night. I went over to my mom's house, had some cousins over, my first cousins, some of her first cousins, etc. And yeah, man, 97. It's kind of a, you know, you think you're getting old. I go, oh, I'm getting old. I'm 42. 97. Born in 1925. Think about that for a minute. I mean, World War One was what, 1914 to 1918. You're talking 7 years after World War One. You're talking 14 years before World War Two. I mean, think about what the world was like in 1925, how much different it was back then, the stuff you would have lived through seeing, it, you know, and the way things are advancing now. I mean, you know, God willing, you know, any of us make it that long, the stuff we will have lived through and seen as far as progression and so forth. But it's when it's gradual like that, it's not such a mind fuck. But when you sit there and think about it, it really is mind blowing when you picture life in 1925 compared to now. Somebody posted the other day, I shared it, you know, when you, again, your perspective on things, depending how you phrase them and view them, it's so different. So if you look at like, the post said 2022 is close to 1980 as 1938 is to 1980. Think about that. That's a mind fuck. So 42 years in either direction. I mean, I was born in 79. So when someone says 1980, I think of that as like pretty recent history. But 1980 is to now what 1938 was to 1980. So if you were around in 1980 and someone referred to 1938, that's like referring to 1980 now. That's wild. That's really mind-blowing. But yeah, you know, you think about that generation, the greatest generation when they came here with nothing. I mean, they really did. All our grandparents that immigrated here and Ellis Island and stuff, like, came here with nothing as kids. I mean, not only is that the World War II generation, but they, you know, if anyone really built our country, it was them. You know, it was a different time mentality wise. If people came here, they just wanted an opportunity. They just wanted to live in America. They just wanted to be able to say they were free and make a life for themselves and not have to worry about war and oppression and all these crazy things that were going on all over Europe forever. And they were just happy to be here. They were proud to be American. They kept their heads down. They worked their asses off. And you know, so many people here today, what we have, we really do owe them. And the world really could have gone so much differently if they hadn't been such a strong, you know, steadfast group with so much resolve in them and just really like a natural toughness and just, again, a great perspective on life. Perspective is everything. And the human ability is not limited by anything other than our perspective on what we can achieve. And if anybody proved it, it was those guys. It was the greatest generation. And there, you know, are very few of them left nowadays, unfortunately, but speaking of stuff, people should be appreciative for those who came before them and fought and worked their asses off and bled and died and everything else so that we could have what we have now. Appreciation. Talk about appreciation all the time. Here's an interesting thing I was thinking of the other day that I discussed online with some people, which is, you know, it's a tough balance. Here's why it's interesting. There's two things I talk about a lot. And they almost seem to have some antithetical characteristics. And it's an interesting dichotomy, which is I talk all the time about being appreciative and thankful for what we have, which we need to be. But then I also talk all the time about, you know, pursuing dreams and pursuing passions and taking risks and how costly it is when you fail to do those things. So you can then ponder and kind of say, well, Where's the balance there? How do I reconcile those two things? How do I pursue all of these dreams and passions and risks and do all these things that are necessary to fulfill my life while also being appreciative and thankful and content with what I have? And it is. It's an interesting dilemma that you kind of run into there. But you know, I've been thinking about this topic, and I think it is really one of the keys to life is finding, I hate saying find that balance. It's such a cliche thing talking about balance, but you know, learning to be able to blend those two things, like I'm talking about, the being appreciative and thankful, and then also being courageous enough and ballsy enough to chase your dreams because you only live once. And those things do seem like they can get in each other's way sometimes. So I think achieving that, if you could do both of those things, you'll have a pretty idyllic life, you know, all other things considered, all things being equal. And here's how I would personally parse some of that out a little bit to kind of blend it in the mind properly, which is one, the things you're chasing should never be materialistically based. So like whatever dreams you have, yes, I'm not saying don't strive for success. I'm not even saying don't strive to make a ton of money. That's a whole different thing. But your primary motivation should be based in a deeper meaning and purpose and passion. And those should be the things guiding you above all else. That's number one. And then number two, the thankfulness and the appreciation should really be directed at the journey, the experience itself. Because You don't want to just be content with where you've gotten. Being too content can be a killer. And, you know, people confuse sometimes being content with being thankful and appreciative. You could still be the most appreciative person ever and not be necessarily content. You can still be humble and recognize the fact that you're so blessed and have so much more than people that live now, people that live throughout history. You can recognize all those things. Be humble as shit, and then still want more and still be willing to risk more. The truth is, the main thing you should be thankful for and appreciative for is this life itself, the fact that you're here, the fact that you're even capable of pondering such things and then pursuing such things. And then, because the things that you have right this moment, they're not going to be the same things and people necessarily 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. So you really do have to appreciate the experience of it, the journey of it. You got to look at life like it's the most amazing gift of all, the most thankful the number one thing that you should say, wow, I'm alive. I've been granted this insanely unique gift of consciousness where I can sit here and talk and have thoughts and experience every emotion that there is to experience. But that place of wanting more and wanting to have all those experiences and wanting to do all those things, again, it's intention. What is my intention? It's got to come from a place of love, meaning, purpose, passion. You know, you can strive for dreams and then still remain true to yourself, true to your life, true to your consciousness, true to your soul. If you're appreciative simply for the fact that you're alive and the journey of it and the experience of it and understanding that going through this is actually the greatest gift of all, the other stuff will kind of set itself straight. And if you look at it like, well, I want to have as many experiences possible while I'm here and feel as many things as possible, even if that brings a lot of pain and heartache and sadness and all that stuff, because that's the point and it will. And that's why people don't want to take those risks necessarily. But you go, well, that's the whole game. That's the whole ball game. And then we all die. We all go away. Nothing's permanent. No one's permanent. It all ends. We don't even know what the fuck we're doing here. And then we worry about the silliest things and we allow them to be obstacles and impediments in our lives rather than really pursuing the things and maximizing our passion and the things that we really would enjoy and be good at in life. You definitely can't base your happiness on trying to impress other people. That's for damn sure. Not from any standpoint, not from a materialistic standpoint, trying to show off for other people, not from personality or an emotional standpoint, trying to fit into some mold of some other person's ideals of you, good or bad. Know yourself and who you are and what you're all about and what you're into. Lean the fuck into it. You know, it's not for other people to understand. Do what's in your soul. Do what's deep in your soul. That thing that you lay down at night and think about and long for and want. Do it. Because anything you do in this life, you're going to have to mean it on a genuine level, or it's not going to be fulfilling. It's not going to give you any meaning. It's not going to fulfill any sort of purpose that you have inside you. You got to mean that shit on like a genuine deep level. I shared a clip recently from TikTok. I shared it on Twitter. It was a dude talking about, it was such a great clip. And I said, I have no idea who this guy is. It was such a good accent too. I guess he's Swedish. My man Kev told me who he is, so now I know who he is. He's a soccer player. I'm going to mispronounce this dude's name. Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He's like a Swedish soccer player. In any case, the dude was talking all about, you know, be comfortable with yourself. He's saying, I'm most comfortable just being me. Here's what was great about what he said. He goes, look, we all make mistakes. He goes, yeah, you learn from the mistakes. He goes, but you still make mistakes. You know, he goes, nobody's perfect. What is perfection? You're building up some fake thing that doesn't even exist. But he said, for me, perfection is being yourself. I don't know if anybody's ever said it that simply before. I'm sure it's been said, but I love that quote. Perfection is being yourself. Because there is no objectively perfect thing, okay? Again, perception is everything, right? There is no perfection. There is no perfect. Nothing's perfect. Everything's flawed, okay? But if you could truly just be yourself because you're perfect, right? It sounds a little silly and cliche to say it that way maybe, but perfection is being yourself. The closest thing to perfect you're going to be is being as true to yourself as you possibly can. So I love that quote, and I don't watch soccer, and I'm a fan of this dude now. You know, a lot of this boils down to is something I think about all the time and have thought about a lot lately, which is there's a couple of negative emotions that really end up kind of ruling people's lives and ruining people's lives and really are kind of at the core of some of the negative emotions we suffer, which is, look, you're either going to have failures and rejections or you're going to have regrets. Okay. Which is worse, right? If you're afraid of failing at things or you're afraid of being rejected, that could be, you know, career-wise, that could be relationship-wise. Failing could be at anything. fear of being judged, fear of being ridiculed, any of that stuff. If you let the fear of that stuff dictate how you live your life, you're going to have regrets, bad ones. Now, if you want less regret, you're going to suffer a lot of those failures and rejections and criticisms. Okay. But which is worse? You know, a lot of people have experienced both. And I talk a lot about regret. You know, there's the regret of doing things you shouldn't have done. Those are tough. But the toughest regrets are not doing things that you should have done. That, to me, it's not even close. And when you look back at certain things and go, man, if only I'd have done this where I failed to act. If only I'd have taken this chance that I was afraid to take. Those are the toughest regrets. I once saw a thing where a guy was talking about interviewing people or talking to people at nursing. I think he's like worked at nursing homes, perhaps. I don't remember what this was from, but he was saying that when you talk to a lot of these elderly people toward the end of their lives in these nursing homes, the one common theme you'll find with all of them is they have regrets, things that they should have done, that they wish they would have done. There's a reason everybody feels that way. Everybody goes, damn, that was that one thing I always wanted to try and I never tried, because now you can't. I mean, who knows what comes after our time here on Earth, but this particular life is the only one of its kind you're going to get. That's for sure. And there's no pain like regret. And again, regret of mistakes is different. Mistakes you can live with, right? It's the regret of the inaction. That's what costs us most. It's the what ifs. You play the what if game in your head, and there's no worse game than the what if game. Look, everything in life that's worth something, and again, I don't mean material, I mean from a meaningful standpoint, that's anything that's going to be extremely meaningful in your life comes with a price. It comes with a price, and you got to look at it and say, okay, am I willing to pay this price? Am I willing to sacrifice what it will take to get this other thing? That's the choice. That's the decision. I've got to pay this to have that. And then once you put that value on it, okay, then you got to decide if that's worth it. The fucking worst motherfucking thing you can do in that instance is then sit there with the decision and not make it and be indecisive. The one thing that we all have a finite amount of is time. And I've said it before, we spend our time without even knowing how much of it we have. You know, you spend something else, you know what you're spending from. You spend time, you don't even know the balance that you're spending from. Shit could be over tomorrow, could be over 50 years from now. You don't know. And if you go after something you really want and you fail, yeah, that hurts like hell. It really does. But it doesn't hurt like the regret of not trying it. And it's also good because you know what? You actually felt something. You felt something you hadn't felt before. You lived. You had a deep human emotion, good and bad. You experienced something human. You know, pay it those respects that it's due. And then dissect the lesson from that and then use it as fuel. Because here's the thing too. Time doesn't heal shit. I've said that before. Here's why people think time heals stuff. And look, maybe my brain works different. So, you know, maybe when I ponder some of these things, how my own brain works, I don't know. But I could tell you this. If I look at the hardest things I've had to deal with in my life and how painful those are in the moment, and then how painful those things are in the immediate time thereafter, and why perhaps it's perceived as less painful as the more time goes by, the time and healing it. Here's what's happening, at least for me again. So like something terrible happens, you lose a loved one, whatever, right? During that time and during the immediate time following that, your synapses in your brain are constantly thinking about that, and they're thinking about the saddest, most negative. So every few seconds, you'll find yourself putting your mind into this emotional state of thinking about how I'll never see this person again and all these other things. Okay. But the more time goes by, you stop putting your brain into that place. It's like a survival mechanism. You can't live in that place for too long. And some people do for far longer than they should, and it ends up ruining their lives. I can tell you that if I think back to some of those events and I choose to deeply ponder in the way that it was at the time, I can feel as sad and emotional and upset and everything else that I felt at the time. It's just you're choosing now to not keep going to that place in your mind over and over and over again. I don't think people realize the amount of obsessive thoughts, for lack of a better word, obsessive thoughts they have throughout the day. It's kind of like your default thoughts that you just go to, positive and negative, throughout the day. And that in our minds becomes a huge part of our existence, because we're not always so present in the day-to-day and what's happening right in front of us. So much of our existence is based on where are we going in our heads and what are we thinking about all day. The thing you're thinking about all day is at least as much or more impactful than what you're even doing all day. And it shouldn't be. It should be the opposite. You should be much more focused on the present and what you're actually doing and living in those moments and feeling those experiences. I say it all the time. You don't want to dwell in the fucking past. You don't want to worry about all the things that could go wrong in the future. Either way, you're screwed. You do that. You're dwelling in the past. It's going to kill you. It really will. It will kill you with pain. You can't go back and change anything. And if you sit there thinking about all the things you wish you could go back and change, it will fucking eat you up. And you got to just take that stuff and go, okay, I'm going to do my best to not go through that same thing I went through that I wish so badly I could change. And if you're sitting there worrying about the future too much, again, not setting goals and dreams and all that, worrying about things that could go wrong in the future, it will paralyze you. You'll sit there not wanting to even try anything at all because of the fear of the failure and the rejection and all the worst case scenarios and the judgment and the criticism. Don't do either. Don't dwell in the past. Don't be all anxious about the future. I'm going to be present and appreciative for this experience, for this journey while I'm in it. And any thoughts I have about the future are going to be based in my dreams and passion and putting meaning and love into my life. Putting purpose into my life. Nothing makes somebody feel better than having purpose in life. And talk about being lucky and fortunate and blessed. And yeah, we're all, most of us, so blessed in so many ways. If you're someone fortunate enough to have like an actual passion in your life, something that you really feel is could be your purpose. You know, like they say, passion leads to purpose. Follow your passion, you'll find your purpose or you'll find your meaning, right? If you've got something you're really into, like especially if you're good at it too, you're really good at something, you're really into something, you really get so much joy out of it. I just put blinders on there and just do that as much as you can. Do that thing. You're not going to please everybody. You're not even going to please all the parts of yourself necessarily. But if you do have that thing, you're so damn fortunate. A lot of people don't, and most people spend their whole lives either searching for it or wishing that they did have it. So if you do, don't take that shit for granted either. And don't listen to anybody else. Again, it's not for other people to understand. If you've got something like that inside of you, just do it. Just go for it. Listen, we've got one shot at this thing, really. We got one shot at this thing and then we are gone. And if we're fortunate as hell, we get decades out of it. The luckiest of the lucky will get 80, 90, 100 years out of it. You don't want to be that person in the nursing home with all the regrets and all the things you wish you could have tried. So I'll leave you all with that big lesson. I didn't talk about the list I'm doing at the end of the show, by the way. I'm doing top five NFL run. There's been such great, some of the better playoff games I remember in a while, NFL playoff games. So you had the crazy Chiefs-Bills game last night, Green Bay the day. There's been some crazy games, and I figure I've only done one sports list, so I'm going to do top five all-time NFL running backs. That's my list. But so, yeah, I'll leave you guys with that, and it's something I say all the time. And I'll go back to what I was saying at the beginning of the show. Find that blend, that balance, how to reconcile, A, being appreciative in the moment, and everything you've got and all the ways that you're blessed, and then B, still chasing all your dreams and not letting all the fears of the rejection and the criticism and the failures. You can be both. You could be the most appreciative, humble, thankful person in the world and the most aggressive dream chaser that ever lived. And it is doable to reconcile those things. And if you can figure out how to do that, I think you'll have a pretty good life, a pretty meaningful life with a lot of joy in it. That's what I think. All right, here comes the list. I won't take forever on it. Top five running backs. When I do sports lists, you know, I got to be a little more, you know, stats oriented, pragmatic with it. I can't, when I do a lot of like the actors and movies and stuff and music, I've been doing like, it's my own personal favorites. But when it comes to sports and I'm doing like top five running backs, yes, my personal favorites and the people I like the most do factor in. But I can't just get on here and be like, Clinton Portis was the greatest running back all time. So I'm not going to do that. And people will probably hate my list anyway and disagree with a lot of these. I don't care. All right, coming in number one, going with Barry Sanders. I don't know. People go, oh, look at all the negative yards he had. He was always getting, he has the most negative runs too. Yeah, he had no fucking offensive line. People say this dude couldn't run between the tackles. Go watch footage of him running between the tackles. He was a bowling ball. That said, he played 10 seasons on the same shitty Lions team. He never had a team. I'll say it all day. If you're in football, you could be the best whatever. Whatever position, you could be the best. You're not winning anything or doing anything without a team. If you don't have a defense, that's at least certain. If you don't have a quarterback, you could be the best wide receiver ever, the best runner. And he's still in his prime. He took these dudes to the playoffs all the time. 4 or 5 years, he took them to the playoffs. Rushed for 2,000 yards in 97. The dude always was catching, you know, 30, 40 balls a year for, you know, another few hundred yards. But here's the thing. I actually went back and made highlight footage a while ago for TikTok of like different running backs. And so I watched a ton of footage of these guys and I'm basing a lot on that too. And I grew up watching Barry, but go look at Barry's. Nobody was more impressive with the moves they made and just the combination of speed and athleticism and IQ. And nobody made more out of nothing than this guy. And again, just picture if you put him on Tom Brady's Patriots, or forget that. Picture you put him on this year's Rams team with Matt Stafford and company, even. Just pure running back. You're starting a team today. You want a dude to go out there and just make amazing plays and give the defensive coordinator nightmares. That's the dude I'm taking. Barry Sanders, to me, is the best running back that ever did it. All right, coming in number two, people are going to hate my list. I don't care. Pull up stats, pull up highlights. You'll see what I'm talking about. I know everybody's got their... Coming in number two, Marshall Faulk. Marshall Faulk, second best running back all time, in my humble opinion. All right, first off, the dude played 12 seasons. That's a ton of seasons for a running back, 12 years. Some of those seasons cut short with injuries and stuff. He was still rushing 1,300 yards, even in injury seasons. He was getting 50-plus receptions a year. Forget that. From 98 to 02, five straight seasons, the dude had 80 catches plus a year for five straight seasons. 80 receptions as a running back. And if you think he wasn't running the ball, he was still rushing for 1,300 yards or whatever all those years. And if I know, he was the greatest show on turf. I mean, it does show you what you could do with the team, right? The guy was on that amazing Rams team with Kurt Warner and Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt and those guys. But he did it with Indy too. If you look at before the Rams took him, he played in 98 for the Colts. He still ran for 1,300 yards and had 900 receiving yards on 86 catches with the Colts. This dude, perhaps to me, the best season ever for running back in 1999, rushed for 1,381 yards and had 1,048 receiving yards. And if you look at those seasons with the Rams, yeah, defenses were afraid of them tossing it down the field, but he had like 3-4 years there where he was averaging like almost 5.5 yards a carry. Or he did average 5.5 a carry one season. Imagine every time you rush the ball, you're getting 5+ yards. So yeah, I'm justifying that pick all day. Marshall Faulk, second best running back to ever do it. Moving on the list. And in that same light, number three, LaDainian Tomlinson. And anyone who played fantasy football, look, if you go back and look at, I know they didn't have fantasy back when these older dudes were playing, but these older guys' stats aren't going to hold up from a fantasy standpoint the way that these other, like if you went and actually calculated it, it wouldn't hold up compared to these guys I'm talking about. LaDainian Tomlinson for 7 or 8 years was the best running back in football, hands down. Dude was always rushing 13, 14, 1500 a season. He was getting another 400 or 500. Again, the receiving. 2000, talk about again, one of the best years ever. 2003, the man rushed for 1,645 yards and he caught 100 balls. He caught 100 balls for another 725 yards. You're going to rush for 1,600 and change and catch 100 balls out of the backfield. Come on. So there you go. LaDainian Tomlinson, number three. All right, coming in number four, the old timers will start to appreciate some of these picks a little more. I got to include, and again, I've gone back and done highlight reels. This particular dude I didn't watch play in my lifetime, but based on all the highlights I've seen, based on the statistics, I got to go Jim Brown. Jim Brown does belong on this list. I know a ton of people say he's the best running back of all time. Maybe if I'd seen him play, I'd have a little more nostalgia about it, but still, I don't think it stacks up. So I got to put him down to number four. He played nine seasons, and they had, by the way, some amazing, the seasons, because he was playing a while ago, 12 games, 14 games, seasons, not 16, 17 like you have today. So he did rush for 1,500 yards in a 12-game season. He ran for almost 1,900 yards in a 14-game season, so he definitely would have had some of those 2,000-yard type seasons. But ton of touchdowns, power, 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 running motherfuckers over. Still fast, still caught 30, 40 balls a season out of the backfield. Does have a championship in 64. So, you know, he's got the accolades, and a lot of people have him number one. I'm putting him number four. And then number five, another guy people, I think, have number one often. Coming in number five, top off the list, Walter Payton. And Walter Payton, again, the longevity counts here to me, 13 seasons. He's got a championship, a Super Bowl ring with the Bears, so that counts for something. Again, Duke played 13 seasons. Nine out of those 13 seasons, he had 1,300 yards rushing plus. 1977, he had 1,852 yards in 14 games, so that's impressive too. And again, he still caught 40, 50 balls out of the backfield. Versatile guy. So that's the list. Johnny's top five all-time NFL running backs. Couple shout outs for people that came close to make the list. I got to mention Earl Campbell when I did the highlights. Talk about a vicious Jim Brown. Yeah. Earl Campbell, dude. That guy was fucking relentless. Watch some of those old Earl Campbell highlight videos of this dude just running motherfuckers over and dragging people and the relentlessness to which he would use to get into the end zone. My goodness. Another guy, obviously, Emmitt Smith, all those championships with the Cowboys. Full disclosure, I'm a lifelong Redskins fan, so fuck the Cowboys. It's hard for me to put him on the list, but 15 seasons, three Super Bowls. How do you not consider him one of the best ever? But again, a lot of it is the eyeball test. You know, look, I look at Emmitt and just eyeball test. The greatest thing about Emmitt was the longevity, what a professional he was, the IQ. Yeah, he was a great athlete, but I don't put him up there with those all-time guys from a talent and skill standpoint. But he made the most out of what he had, and he played forever. And he was versatile, also caught a lot of balls. A ton, actually. A couple other guys, Eric Dickerson, Marcus Allen, Adrian Peterson. O.J. Simpson was a great running back. I pointed out the other day that people remember you for the worst thing you've ever did. Nobody talks about what a great running back O.J. Simpson really was. And then a guy people don't talk about a ton, Gale Sayers. Again, you can't say he's the best from a, you know, statistical, whatever. He only played those few seasons, but for the time he did it, again, eyeball test, you watch certain guys, and Gale was doing, so far ahead of his time, was doing stuff that people would still be mesmerized by, would still hold up today. So anyway, that is the show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I really, truly appreciate it more than you know. And hit me up on Twitter anytime, at John Cat Show. Love to hear from you guys. I hope everybody has a really nice, fun rest of their week, and I will see y'all in a couple days. Be good. Peace.